Welcome to the ISPNIC Hot Topics Podcast, brought to you by ISPNIC. Each episode will host a short interview with key opinion leaders in PICU or NICU and other fields of medicine. Keep listening to find out more about this episode's host, guest, and featured hot topic.
Hello, everyone. My name is Akash Deep. I'm a pediatric intensivist at King's College Hospital in London, UK, and I'm the chair of scientific affairs for the European Society of Pediatric and Neonatal Intensive Care, ISPNIC. And I'll be your host for this episode. So during today's podcast, I'll be speaking to Professor Vinay Nadkarni, who is the endowed chair in the Department of Anesthesiology, Critical Care Medicine, and Pediatrics at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, University of Pennsylvania, Perelman School of Medicine. In addition to exploring Dr. Nadkarni's research interests in simulation and cardiopulmonary resuscitation, we'll also talk about his new role as the president of the SCCM. Welcome, Vinay, to this podcast. It's an honor to speak to you. So let's start by discussing about your interest in cardiopulmonary resuscitation. So we all know that you've excelled in your research career in this field. So what, according to you, makes the most difference to outcomes after CPR? Or if I may ask, in other words, what defines good quality CPR?
Well, Akash, I think it's clear that preventing the cardiac arrest is probably better than treating it once it occurs. But I think the key element is in preparation, audit, and then the integration of the after-event review to improve outcomes for the next patient. So I think it's setting targets, training individuals, teams, and systems to respond, and then monitoring what you're doing, identifying what went well, what could be improved, and then working with that team to improve it the next time around. That process of audit, measurement, titration to the timing, the intensity, and the duration of the interventions really seems to make a difference in every system that employs it. And so I don't think there's a magic bullet or one specific aspect that always seems to work, but it's really that combination, that bundle of care that combines the training, preparation, implementation, and then the follow-up outcome that feeds back into the next preparation that makes a difference.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dr. Nadkarni. And another debate, Vinay, if you agree with me, is the ongoing duration after which CPR people think should be discontinued or deemed futile. So is there evidence, is there any difference between out-of-hospital and in-hospital cardiac arrest in this scenario?
Akash, I think a while ago, there really was a difference. And it used to be like two doses of epinephrine, 20 minutes was generally accepted as a limit of viability, you know, where most people would stop. Those edges have really blurred over time. And similarly, we've gone away from thinking about things as being in-hospital or in the ICU versus a critical care without walls. So some very capable EMS systems that can, in fact, even put patients on ECPR in the field, perhaps would have a very different duration before one would call it quits than a system which had very basic offerings, where a prolonged resuscitation with minimal perfusion of brain, heart, and lungs would portend a poor outcome. So I don't think we have any evidence that there is a specific time cutoff where the treatment of reversible causes and the provision of excellent circulation needs to be done. Earlier is probably better than later. And I also think we have a blurring between out of hospital and in hospital. Having said that, for practical reasons, many hospitals, many resuscitation systems have put limits on the duration of CPR in the out of hospital setting for which they will provide advanced therapies. For instance, in my hospital, if there's more than 60 minutes of CPR in the out-of-hospital setting, we won't put them on ECPR once they reach the hospital. Akash, can I ask you, what about for your system? Do you have any specific limitations on out-of-hospital versus in-hospital settings?
I think, as you rightly said, the main thing is how much do you intervene if the out-of-hospital cardiac arrest is exceeded X amount of time. Like, we did have a patient last week itself, a 13-year-old girl had a V-fib arrest, was airlifted to us and had quite significant amount of downtime, but we still did try ECPR because the total duration was less than 60 minutes. You know, so I think, again, not very evidence-based, I would say, but people do pick up a number and say, this is what's happening.
And Akash, I think that shouldn't be interpreted that every patient has to be resuscitated for at least an hour before stopping.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you, Vinay. We move on next to your international collaboration with Global Registry of Patients with Cardiac Arrest. So would you mind, Vinay, telling us more about it and what are the goals of this registry?
Well, the specific registry that you're referring to, I think, is the PD Rescue Registry. And basically, that's a combination of a quality improvement data registry and a research registry core. And the way it's built is really on the basis of an in-hospital pediatric cardiac arrest or CPR registry, which has about 60 hospitals across the world now that are contributing data. And it starts with the core elements of the Get With The Guidelines Resuscitation American Heart Association in-hospital registry, some very basic elements. And then it grows from there to capture the pre-arrest course, the training, and then the data that directly downloaded from the resuscitations, the defibrillator downloads, the bedside monitor, arterial waveforms, end-tidal CO2 waveforms, et cetera. And those are transmitted. And then the after-event reviews, hot and cold debriefs, and the follow-up of the patients into the outpatient setting for 3 months, 6 months, and a year after, with relatively standard data sets. Not every center is contributing all of that data, but some centers are. And so it's essentially building up a 10-step approach, collecting data, auditing it, analyzing it, and then feeding it back on dashboards to those sites to enable them to improve their practice and to link them with other centers that are doing other aspects of the resuscitation process. This has grown. We now have more than 2,000 in-hospital pediatric cardiac arrests in that registry. Wow. And then about 1,000 of those have uploaded their monitor, defibrillator, and bedside waveforms for analysis and process improvement.
And is it restricted to countries, say, in the so-called Western world, or is it rolled out to the low-middle-income countries as well?
We started it with the Western world and the big hitters like Great Ormond Street and CHOP and Boston and Cincinnati and other places. But now we've developed the capability to reach some of the critical access hospitals. There's a group forming in India. The Australian New Zealand ANZICS has picked it up. We now are talking with hospitals in Latin America and have a Spanish hub, a Netherlands hub, and also are reaching out to Africa. So it is now starting to spread, but it usually starts with the centers that are better resourced to collect the data, which tend to be the tertiary care centers, and they then serve as a hub to support their feeding hospitals to try to engage and improve the care across the board.
Great. Thank you, Vinay. And we all know that another interest of yours is simulation. And I've seen you doing it. You've worked absolutely tirelessly with a number of countries to set up their simulation programs locally. So would you please give our listeners a few examples of these collaborations and how these are making a difference to the local healthcare system there?
Well, it's really sort of a grassroots movement, along sort of as a partner to the resuscitation training, a effective means of acquiring skills and retaining skills in a low-dose, high-frequency fashion using the techniques of debriefing, hot and cold, have been very useful in the resuscitation field. That then translated to the interest of select individuals in many different settings and countries, and the recognition that effective simulation-based training didn't require high-tech or high-cost simulators, but instead it was the process of simulation-based education that was most effective. And with that, the group in India, for instance, PD Stars, has really taken this to the limit. They have strategically conducted training of trainers in across the north, south, east, and west in hubs, and then trained the trainers and developed a fellowship program that uses social media to track and train and support the trainers. And they have kind of led the world, I think, in low-cost highly effective simulation-based training development. Similarly in Spain, similarly in Italy, similarly across the world, there are many centers now that are growing and adopting. But one of the beauties of it is that the networking that has been able to be accomplished through the International Pediatric Simulation Societies and the INSPIRE Network, International Network of Simulation-Based Pediatric Innovation, Research, and Education, INSPIRE, has been able to support the community and work together non-competitively to move the process of simulation forward.
Absolutely. When I've seen it happen in India with my own eyes, how it's just spread across north, east, west, everywhere. So I think it's a testimony to how these collaborations were built and how you came to India and started doing work with Rakshay and all these guys. So I think it's absolutely brilliant. Thank you. Lastly, with your new responsibility, and congratulations for that, as the president of the SCCM, what are your thoughts on global collaborations? And what do you think could be the potential barriers and the potential solutions to that?
Well, thank you. It really is an honor to be president of the Society of Critical Care Medicine this year. It's been a long process. And really, I would say that one of my platforms, my major wish would be for us to improve the collaboration between those existing critical care societies and also those that are forming or in their infancy. The platforms for that are sort of programs, education, and research. And oftentimes it's easiest to start with research because those bonds and collaborations have been partially formed. And oftentimes there's external funding that can be raised for such endeavors. But I think it's really important that we connect. It's been difficult with COVID, but with sort of the resurgence of live meetings and the ability to collaborate and to use the techniques that were developed during COVID, like Zoom and these types of webinars, to be able to connect remotely in a much more real way is an emphasis. Our society, the Society of Critical Care Medicine, has started to work in a few different ways. We raised $5.5 million to support a pilot project in Africa to build oxygen factories, train technicians, and provide solar energy capture and support for critical access hospitals, a subset as a pilot project in collaboration with MOUs with the individual countries of Sierra Leone, of the Gambia, of Ghana, and Liberia in very poor countries to try to create an example and a pilot program that the ministries of health and the countries could adopt and adapt in order to make them effective. And this was really realized during the pandemic, where the critical oxygen sources and the ability to maintain and sustain them became readily apparent. And it's kind of a new venture for the society, but one that I hope will be very fruitful and worthwhile.
Winnie, I've been very closely following you on Twitter with all your visits to India, Bangladesh, and Africa. And I think this is the way I think we would be able to reach globally with what we have and what we can learn from them and what we can give them in return as well. So I think it's a give and take, collaboration which we have. So thank you, Winnie. It's been a pleasure, as always, talking to you. Thank you for your time. And we in SPNIC would look forward to future research collaborations with you and the SCCM. And we look forward to welcoming you in Athens in a few months' time.
Thank you so much. I'm really looking forward to it.
Thank you.